Hi, and welcome to Bye Bye Bye. I'm Imogen.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Claire.
And yeah, welcome back. We're back in the swing of things. We know what we're doing, I think.
Mostly. Well, today's topic is being your best you. So,
oh,
we're being our best us right now. Our best, our best ourselves. That, but, you know. I don't know. Whatever.
Being your best you.
Being your best you. Yeah. I already am my best me.
I think that I think the implication is that you have to be your best you at all times, because otherwise you wouldn't be you at all. Isn't that the way it goes? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure how it works. Like, I really don't know. Like, is being your best you arrogant because you should always be striving to be better? Or is being your best you like, this is fine for now because I'm a work in progress. Like, I don't know. Or should I avoid my perfectionist tendencies? You can tell I put a lot. I had too many days to prepare this.
Yes. I'm sorry, real life interfered with our recording schedule.
It happens.
Yeah, it does.
So we're gonna jump right in. Closet in Canada asks, how do you bring yourself to understand how someone can hate something you really love?
Oh, so see, I'm not being my best you because I don't understand that. Why would you?
I don't think I bothered to try to understand it. I just try to, at this point, not think about it.
I mean, like, in my 20s, I spent more effort than I should have trying to convince people that they were wrong for disliking things that I liked, but eventually I just got tired.
Yeah, it is tiring.
And there were better fights to pick.
I had,
And I also accepted that no one has ever convinced me to like something I didn't like.
In fact, like, when they try, I get, like, stodgily against it. Dig my heels in and...
Yeah, it's interesting. I hung out with a whole heap of people when I was at university and high school who I probably shouldn't have. In that, you know,
I'm shocked by this information.
I was suited to be the weird kid in the D&D group. And there was even like a D&D group and everything that was there. And I'm so pissed off with myself that I didn't actually just screw over all my popular friends and go play with them, because I would have had so much more fun. I would have had so much more fun. My life would have been so much better. Anyway, and they were always convincing me telling me that things I liked were immature or
right,
yeah, and I'm just like, fuck off. Now, I mean, then I was like, oh, I'll just hide it then, and no one will know that I'm massively into Star Wars and Star Trek, and I spend all of my time at home alone playing video games. But you know, now I embrace that truth, and I don't talk to those people anymore. Fuck them. Basically. Yeah.
Like, seriously, I don't know. I feel like the three of us went through the school of hard knocks just by, like, the nature of being in the Dragon Age fandom. Yeah. We haven't talked about Dragon Age on this podcast in quite a while.
We have,
by the
not.
Way,
we've been
very
really
good.
Good.
I'm always looking for an excuse to give us cookies.
Yes. Well, I mean, yeah, I suppose we should really just embrace our truth, which is that we're a Dragon Age podcast.
Being our best us. Anything goes podcast, I think.
That's true.
But I mean, like, I came into Dragon Age fandom right around when Dragon Age 2 came out, like, just a little prior. And, you know, so, like, that was the dark times.
That was the darkest timeline. Precisely after Dragon Age 2, because I came in to talk to people after Dragon Age 2.
In my couple of weeks just prior to Dragon Age 2, I was a Kuzlin player, so that was fun.
I was in a while before that. Like, I had been playing the games a while before that, but I mostly avoided the fandom. I mean, not, like, purposely. I just didn't bother to seek it out.
Yeah.
I can't remember why, and I ventured into the BioWare forums because
I talk about Anders.
Yeah, looking.
That was the only place I have pretty much ever posted, and that was the only reason I was there.
I think I originally went in to ask a question about Dragon Age, the first one, because I did actually start interacting with the fandom during Origins. And I can't remember how, but I did get sucked in. I hung around on the Alistair thread because the Anders thread didn't exist yet. And because, yeah, I started before Awakening came out. I was actually hanging out in the Bioware forum. So that's interesting. And I was all cranky because you couldn't have Alistair as a companion in Awakening.
Oh, that did make me cranky.
Yeah.
I actually resented Anders my first playthrough because I was like, oh, they're just trying to give me like an Alistair fill-in.
Yes, that's exactly what I said.
You all are the exact reason I almost never played that game, because after I finished Origins, I was like, what do people think about Awakening? Because I want to know if it's worth the buy. And everyone was like, all the companions suck. Anders is just an Alistair fill-in and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, man, that's kind of sad.
That was me, dude.
I was like, oh, I actually love him and he's nothing like Alistair.
I was like a V'Elanna fangirl from day one. But
you liked her before she was cool, but she was always cool. I really enjoyed Awakening, but yeah, I was resentful at first because of the lack of Alistair. But then again, yeah, I don't know. I switched to loving Anders pretty quick. I mean, he's very lovable.
I liked it more that way because it was more depressing.
Well, the further I got into the game, the more I liked him when I realized he had secret rage issues.
When you realized, he had a deep, dark, and mysterious past.
A dark and mysterious past. And a tragic future.
our friend Kelly wrote the most, we've talked about her before, wrote the most amazingly intricate and long Anders fan fiction. It was full of great smut. And I think I would be a liar if I said that wasn't part of the reason why I absolutely got into him as a character, because, yeah, she had such a good time with him.
I got into fandom and didn't know about smut.
How did you not know about smut? I knew about smut since I was like, I don't know.
12. I didn't know people wrote it and put it on the internet. Like, I was still in that phase of my life where I was pretty sure people would laugh at me for shit like that. And, like, I wrote it and kept it in a journal. But I surely didn't put it on the internet for other people to see. And,
I didn't put anything online, but, I mean, I think that was one of the very first things I ran into.
Like, the day I discovered the K meme, like, I was like, what the fuck is this? I don't either, but, like, I discovered, I'm like, what the fuck is this? And someone was like, oh my god, it's like you've been living in the world and didn't know there were cars.
I didn't know about the kink meme until Dreamwidth happened, I don't think.
I think yours is the first K meme fic I ever read.
Which one was that one?
Was it you that wrote the one where Eamon is spying on?
Yes,
yes,
yes.
For those of you who can't read my mind, Tegan and Isolde going at it.
Yeah, and that was a good prompt.
That was a good one. I liked that one.
Yeah, it hit all of my disgusting kinks as well. Like, I dislike every single character I'm writing here. I really don't like any of them, so I can do whatever the fuck I want with it. It was good fun. Like, I never got the Tegan love. I found Tegan so dull and annoying, and I never got why everyone loved him so much. So,
he suits his purpose. You know, he like serves a purpose in the narrative, whatever.
I think it's because you can flirt with him, and literally anyone you can flirt with, there's going to be a fandom.
Yeah, he's a white nobleman you can flirt with, like, yep,
pretty much.
Yeah.
And he was older, so like the hot dad people were out there because they didn't give us that with Eamon. Let's be real.
No, I never
understand why Eamon looked so old though. Like,
yeah, they have the Aunt May phenomenon where they think that just because someone's not directly a parent, then they have to look 10 times older than they are in real life.
Although, to be fair, Cullen looked like he was like 40 and he was like 18 or 19.
Well, I mean, it was like fake medieval times. Life was hard.
I saw someone post a picture of Cullen and they're like, they inserted the What We Do in the Shadows, like, only 16.
I think I did. Life was hard.
It was fake medieval times when there was when everyone looked old and there were no black people.
We didn't invent them until like post, I don't know, Victorian era, I guess. I don't know.
Even later, probably.
I don't know eras.
Until like the 50s or something.
Europe has too many eras. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh. I think they'd probably quite like to go back to a few of them, at least right now.
Oh, I would. I'd never mind. We're not going there. Anyway, so when you're trying to understand how people really hate something you love, I'm just
on a real tangent there.
Yeah, we did. I'm bringing this back in. Learn to curate your space. Like,
yeah.
Don't hate read. Don't go to people's blogs that you know.
Do not hate read.
This is a case of do it. Brandon, this is a case of do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. No, you know what? I'm going to tell you guys that I've grown as a person because I know I don't hate read anymore. Now, my friends.
I actually do my best to completely avoid it. Like, sometimes I accidentally, because I'll be reading something I didn't know.
Someone will link to like someone that I don't talk to anymore that I've intentionally blocked, and I'll stumble upon it, but I don't go seeking it out anymore. Now I have friends who will go in and do the covert ops for me and report back.
Yeah,
but I don't do it myself because I used to fixate, I used to do it and get mad, and it just isn't worth it. So
no,
it isn't worth it.
Yeah, you're not going to understand why someone hates what you like, and you're just going to end up, one, hating them by proxy, and two, just getting mad and fixating on it. And
Which just leads us into our next question: is how do you avoid taking things personally?
Hmm.
Oh God,
that's more difficult. I mean,
I can't answer that one.
I think sometimes you just have to accept that it is personal.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, like it doesn't mean to be, but. The way that people are so weirdly entangled with the things that they love, like, it just, at some point, it just is personal. And then fandom, you know, with their purity culture, they're like, ew, if you like this, you're a pedophile.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I don't think I do take it personally anymore. Like, it's that guy, who's that Scottish guy who has the talk show, you know, at the bottom line is I want people to like what I do, but if they don't, then fuck them.
Is it Lemmy? Is that his name? No.
I don't know. He's some Scottish talk show host. I've never actually seen him. I've never actually watched him. I just have seen him in GIFs. So, but yeah, it's just...
Oh, Craig Ferguson. Oh, I love him.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Yeah, he's
Craig
great.
Ferguson.
But yeah, and I think that comes with age. I think that just that level of I don't give a fuck comes with being an old lady. And that's...
And I don't.
It's really hard.
I don't want anybody to mistake it for maturity. That's not what we're saying.
No, it's just tiredness. Like it's just exhaustion.
It's just exhaustion. You just get to a point where you're like, I can't fucking do this anymore.
I'm too tired. Yeah, and I mean, it does. I mean, I think you do get to a point when you realize that there's things you're wasting energy on that you really shouldn't be. And I think that's a big reason why my 40s are going to be the best years of my life as opposed to.
I mean, there's still things that get under my skin that I know shouldn't, and mostly it's just about disengaging and putting your mind on other things, because it's not worth it. It's just exhausting and stupid.
Yeah.
The most important part, I think, is learning to identify when it happens, because you don't always go into these discussions. You're having a chat, you're just having fun, everyone's joking around, and all of a sudden like you're getting really defensive and you don't know why, and you have to stop and be able to look at it and be like, oh, I'm taking this personally, this isn't really personal. And that's when you figure out how to disengage, but that takes time to figure out, you know.
It also takes time to realize, I mean, you have to be pretty self-aware as well. Like, you have to be going, okay, well, I'm getting angry, but I don't know why I'm getting angry. And then you sort of have to sort of go, okay, well, it's because of this, and should I be getting angry about it or shouldn't I? And
as a general rule, is just something is good to pay attention to, get good at.
Yeah.
Like, that's something I did with my therapist, was just, I kept an actual journal for a week, I think. writing down things that would make me mad or happy or anything, just so like I could, you know, learn to disengage if I was getting mad at something, or learn to shift my focus if I was getting really anxious about something. And
yeah, God, anxiety is the killer, isn't it?
To have some sort of self-awareness.
Oh yeah, it's just, I don't know, I my anxiety, because I've stopped taking meds for mine now, for a variety of reasons, and it's just really interesting to be able to pinpoint and realize that's what it is. Like for so long before I realized that I had anxiety, I was just like, what the fuck is wrong with me? I don't get it. Why am I like this? And then when I finally got to the point where I was like, oh, it's because your brain's fucked, you stupid idiot. So yeah, recognizing that I'm getting angry and upset because of my brain and not because of the outside world is a very, very important step that happened to me.
Okay, who's tapping on something?
Is it me?
I don't know. I can hear
it. I'm not moving. So.
It sounds like someone tapping on their mic. Like,
yeah.
Oh.
Is it still going?
Nope.
No.
Yeah.
No, it was just while you were talking.
Sorry.
I think you might have leaned in or something.
Yeah, I just... that's right. I put my phone down and tapped on it. That's probably what it was.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So how do you stop yourself feeling guilty when putting yourself first and you set boundaries so that you stop taking things personally? Personally, I don't have this particular problem anymore, feeling guilty about like cutting even people out.
I think it's just practice, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, and then you just feel so good. When you give yourself some space and some like room to breathe and toxic people out of your life, you're just like, I'm so much happier.
Yeah. Like you can either, I think you have two options there. You can either just learn to work through the fact that you're not going to like the same things as everybody else that you're sharing interests with, or just cut them out. Yeah. Like, you got to learn to adapt or just avoid. Or maybe that's just me. I don't know.
I think that the guilt that you feel will pass. This too shall pass. And if you feel guilty, it's not because you're doing the wrong thing. It's just because you've been given expectations that you don't feel like you're meeting, and the expectations are not worth it. So yeah, it's like you just have to coast through it, honey. Sorry, coast through.
And it
there's another side.
I say this a lot here, but you got to put on your own oxygen mask before you can help anybody out. Help anybody else out, and you can't pour from an empty glass. You know, like whatever metaphor appeals to you more. So you have to figure out how to stay, you know, in a good place for yourself before you can interact with other people.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're feeling guilty about it, it's just think about the fact that overall you'll be a better friend if you're interacting with people when you're in a good place than... if you're pushing yourself to the limit all the time, then you're just going to be miserable and unhelpful.
Because then you start spiraling and you pull people in with you. And while in the moment that might feel fun.
Yeah.
I mean, not from experience or anything, but it might feel fun in the moment. But after a little while, it starts to have repercussions and people don't want to talk to you anymore. Imagine that.
Then you'll be the one getting cut out.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I am okay being cut out if I'm the person causing someone a lot of stress.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like... I'm remarkably, I don't know, unaware of where I am with people at any time. So, like, there's probably some people I would notice and I would feel really bad, but most of the time I'd just be like, oh, I haven't heard from them in a while. Oh, well.
Claire, I cut you out 3 weeks ago.
That's why she's not talking to you. Brandon's like, Imogen, tell Claire this. Claire, tell Imogen to tell. Oh, I don't know. Okay, yeah. We're filtering real life through RP.
I just want to joke about something from RP, but I will
we'll wait until later that. when we need to waste time. Yeah, I I had something to say there, and now it's gone. Like, I had something serious to add to the podcast discussion.
You've cut yourself out of your life.
Yes. Sometimes I wish I could. Oh, man.
You know, I do cause myself the most stress.
Yeah, you know what? You know what?
I'm the worst, most toxic person for myself.
Shit, if only there was an option.
If only there was an
option. I think that great little there's a Tumblr post, I think, about, you know, getting possessed by a demon. You're like, yeah, go ahead. See if you can do better than I can. I don't care. Good luck with that shit.
Can't get any worse. Maybe we'll take a few of them out with us.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember. I've had so much, like, mixed reinforcement on people who have cut me out and not cut me out that I can't tell anymore. Like, you would have to tell me. Brandon, I'm cutting you out now. And then go radio silent because, like, I will hunt you down.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you just disappear from my life, I come after you. I'm like, are you okay?
I was.
So, I mean, if you're going to cut me out, just tell me first. Makes it easier for everybody. However, like, the hypocrite in me, I don't tell people when I cut them out. I just, like...
Oh, yeah, I ghost people.
Oh, yeah, I straight up ghost. I delete them everywhere.
Oh, man, I don't think I've ever... yeah, I suppose I've thoroughly cut out a couple of people. But, yeah, most of them have been real-life people rather than people online. But when I do it online, I do tend to get chased. one particular person.
You're just so irresistible.
I make it almost impossible to chase me online. blocked.
I know your home address, so you can't cut me out very
damn
easily.
It. You're right. But at least I'd have a few hours head start.
True.
And cutting True. People out online is a lot more difficult for me than cutting out people because I don't have a lot of, like, real life friends around us, and I moved, you know, like 3,000 miles away from my family. So that's why when people complain about their in-laws, I'm like, you know what you do? You move to a tropical island. Just go.
I'm tempted to sometimes.
I live quite a whiles away from my in-laws, and that doesn't help.
No?
Wait, like, tip of Florida.
But you're still, like, in driving distance, though.
It's...
Like, I feel if you can get there within a single day...
I could get to you in a single day. I don't think I get to Claire in a single day.
If you can get to someone within a single work shift. How's that?
Okay, 8 hours. I think it's an 8-hour flight from Sydney to Hawaii. I'm not entirely certain.
I don't remember.
I may be able to get there if I was doing overtime.
It's 14 hours from here to Korea, so.
Oh. But that's weird. The world's wound, so it's weird.
And you're, like, in a different day.
Yes.
So I think that figures in somehow.
Negative time to go visit.
Yeah, and also going back outside in time. Of the United States, they use the metric system, so I think that changes things too.
The international dateline is different when you're Australian, so it's all...
Yeah.
Man, I want, I keep on thinking we should join up with New Zealand so we can just have her Prime Minister, have their Prime Minister. That'd be good.
Well, that came out of nowhere.
I know, no, it's weird. I was thinking about being in the Southern Hemisphere and how I love New Zealand
because
they're our spiritual brothers and sisters. I don't know, but yeah, they don't like us as much as we like them. they've got small country syndrome. Teeny tiny.
Speaking anyway. Of random Sorry. Out of nowhere questions. Yes. Closet in Canada wants to know, what is a perfectly ordinary chicken? Like, I guess this one was gonna find me eventually. But
yes.
But really the answer to that one is very simple. It's one that is not evil manifest. That's all there is.
Yeah.
So there are none.
Chickens. Yeah, perfectly there are, ordinary chickens don't exist.
Yeah, they're perfect. Exactly, and that's the joke.
Yes. I don't know. I went to visit a friend who has chickens, like actually literally chickens in her backyard, and it's so cool. I love it. They were really sweet. Like, you could pick them up and cuddle them and stuff.
Oh, yeah, domestic chickens.
Yeah, I love it. My dogs would just love it more than me.
in that they'd love to eat them.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the chickens here are, they're wild.
Oh, that's right. They run, it's a tropical island thing, isn't it? There's always chickens running around.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as bad here as it is, say, on Kauai. On Kauai, it's, like, insane. We got off the plane, and there were chickens running across the airstrip. You know, like, they walk up to, they're just fearless, and they're territorial, and it's wild.
We went to Tahiti for our honeymoon, so that's what 16 years ago or something, I don't know, a long time ago, and there were chickens everywhere, chickens and dogs, and they got on really well. Like, the chickens and the dogs didn't, like, the dogs didn't try to eat the chickens or anything
here,
so I don't know.
Here it's chickens and cats.
Yeah, I think I saw more cats than chickens.
Yeah, well, we have more cats on this island than other islands, I think, and like other islands have more chickens, but we do have pretty significant populations, and they are very territorial with one another.
Oh man, yeah, I don't know.
But also, I think go ahead.
Chickens are tasty, so. You know, Doesn't matter if they're perfectly ordinary or evil manifest.
Not the big cocks, though. But when is a big cock ever tasty? Oh, tasty.
You literally only had that question so you could say those two words together. I want a chicken question in there so I can say big cocks.
No matter how juicy they are.
I didn't even make this one up. Closet in Canada sent it to us. Apparently all the people that were in on the joke from the beginning have drifted out of my life.
Oh wow, I was around.
It came from a Terry Goodkind novel, and I will mention it and move on so I don't get on my Terry Goodkind rant. But I think it's like the third book in the series. It's Soul of the Fire is the name of the book in the Sword of Truth series. And there's a scene where one of the main characters is hiding from a chicken. And the chicken is like possessed by a spirit. And there's like this whole passage. I've got a post of it on Tumblr somewhere, but where she's like, and she knew without doubt that was no ordinary chicken. That was evil manifest. And yeah, like,
I've had to post it a few times. On
yeah, I have to every now and then just to keep people up to date. But and this, it would have been hilarious if it was meant to be funny. But I think Goodkind was trying to play it straight. And I was like, that is no ordinary chicken. And in some story that will eventually get published someday, there is a spirit chicken that is going to just one of the main characters is a chicken. So
I've read bits of that. It's awesome. I can't wait to see it in real life. It should be awesome.
Yeah, I've repurposed it. I've got another main character for it, so it'll be back.
Okay, cool.
The main character and the chicken's interactions will be back. I haven't wasted it.
Oh man, I'm sorry. I'm locked in a very, very, very humid, hot room. So if I faint or something, just
okay.
Just be warned.
Oh, she's ghosted us.
She's ghosted us. I've cut you out of my life. Dead air. Oh man.
Oh man. Do you guys have any like local wildlife that is overtaking your area, like our chickens?
Really. I think the Midwest, and I guess the mainland in general, but it's like it's just too open. We've got regular stuff like some squirrels.
Can I tell you a story about the cane toad? Now,
the what?
Have you guys the cane toad? Have you guys heard of cane toads?
Are they like toads that live in
just because I
sugar cane?
Some show about.
Yeah,
Australia.
That Yeah, well, they're a fucking menace here. They're not native, but they're called cane toads. And they were brought in...
because of that episode on The Simpsons.
Is that the one with...
for all of Australia, by the
way. Yeah, we have a lot of invasive non-native species here that do crap like that, like cats.
Yes. Well, the cane toad was... I want to tell you this story because it's interesting. The cane toad was introduced to eat cane beetles, which were plaguing the sugar crops in Queensland. But there were a couple of reasons why this was a fucking dumb thing to do. One, cane toads don't actually eat cane beetles at all, because the cane beetles breed and hang around on the top of the stalks of the cane and not the bottom. And cane toads are fat as fuck and can't get up to eat them. So they don't eat them. And they were brought in specifically to get rid of these beetles. And now they're taking it over. It's ridiculous. And anyway, there's a few great documentaries where they show trucks driving along roads in Queensland, and there's so many cane toads that, like, literally you can see the dots of cane toads on the ground. And there was a bounty at one point for how many cane toads you could kill.
You guys are still like kind of an island nation.
Yeah.
Like, people bring in these non-native species to combat a problem. They're like, oh, yeah, we've got all these chickens, so we're going to bring these mongooses in and have these mongooses, like, eat their eggs. And then everybody gets, like, shocked when the mongoose doesn't eat just chicken eggs.
Yes. And also...
when they run out and start, like, eating the eggs of, like, endangered birds and shit like that, and everyone is just like, oh, wait. Maybe that was a bad idea.
It's the dumbest, stupidest idea, because we've got no big predators here except for crocs. I mean, that's the only thing that's big enough.
I think it was cane toads were like even indirectly killing crocodiles.
They're poisonous.
They're eating the things that the crocodiles eat.
No. It's because cane toads, they're big and fat, and they look like they'd be a good meal. But they're poisonous. Like, if you eat a cane toad, you die if you're a crocodile.
Yeah,
so it's
also like eating, I think they were eating small fish or something too. So
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. Everything except for cane beetles. Everything except for cane beetles. Anyway, yeah. So there's billions of them now, and they're on their way down south. Apparently, magpies have worked out how to eat them without dying, because magpies are smart as fuck.
Well, of course they would. Magpies are awesome. And,
there's a few other bird species that have worked out how to eat them properly, but crocodiles are still dumb as fuck and eat them and die. So, you know. It's just like, Australia is so weird. I mean, we've got funnel web spiders, right, which is one of the most deadly spiders. But deadly spiders in the world, right? But they're only deadly to humans. Like, they don't actually want to kill their prey. They just want to paralyze them. You know, spiders do that. They paralyze and then suck all their fluids out while they're still alive. But for some reason... funnel web spiders, their venom is lethal to humans and only humans. Like, a dog can get bitten by a funnel web and they'll get a bit sick, but they won't die. Whereas, we're on a one way ticket to.
I heard
you in particular.
Fuck you in particular.
Yeah, I can't blame them.
I heard, and I've never bothered to fact check it because I'm inherently lazy. That like daddy long leg spiders are poisonous to humans, but they don't have like a big enough. Jaw span to bite them.
Like,
I don't know if it's true or not. Like they're not physically capable.
I had just heard that they were like really, really poisonous, but they don't actually have any way to bite you. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like they're not physically capable
to, like,
of biting you.
It's not just because they don't have mouths that are big enough to bite you. It's also because the amount of venom that they carry, like. It's like one molecule of venom. So if you collected a heap more of it and popped it in a human, then they'd die. But you'd have to like harvest 5,000 spiders to get enough venom.
Go lie down in a field of daddy long. They don't live in groups though. So
no, they don't. Oh man, did you see? Oh, there was a picture going around. On
Facebook I just squicked myself out with that imagery. Oh,
there's a picture going around Facebook at the moment of a field in Queensland somewhere where the spiders have just made webs in the air, like they've built a network of webs that connects from, you know, one tree on one side of the field to another tree on the other side of the field, and it's just this incredible big sort of I don't know, roof of spider webs filled with spiders.
I'm never visiting you.
Ever. That trip we planned to like internal Australia, it's done. We're
it's all right. It's too hot in the middle of Australia for anything except for snakes. You're all good. Don't worry about that. The funnel webs only live in Sydney. And the ones that made the webs up in Queensland are totally harmless. So.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. At that point, they're capable of enveloping me in a web. So. Like, if you're catching birds in your web, I don't fuck
yeah.
with you.
Man, but isn't it in the Philippines, they've got like a bird-eating spider that's the size of a plate.
Yes.
That actually catches and eats.
All right, we're getting off this topic now. Yeah. Hey!
I can talk about spiders all day.
I hate you. I hate you so
much.
Sorry, guys, I'm ghosting you right now. Okay, just
I know,
kidding.
She's gone.
Hey, Imogen, did you dig up the story that we were going to read last week?
Fake rabbis in the accidental bastard birth?
Yes. Yes, that's the one.
Good. Sin has good titles for his.
Right? I say this a lot. I say this a lot yeah. that Sin, he writes above his weight class. Like, he's punching up, you know?
Yeah.
You know? So.
Okay, so I'll just do it. Hello, fellow bisexuals.
Anyway,
Sin
sorry.
Is back. Are you casting aspersions on people?
No, I'm in the Dragon Age tag for some god unknown reason.
What are you doing in the tag?
Get out of there!
Sorry, someone just made a post saying that they think that the most popular romance in all of Dragon Age is Fenris. They're like, everyone has romanced Fenris. I've literally never romanced Fenris. If I had to guess who everyone has romanced, probably Alistair. Anyways.
I've never, even when I was deliberately trying, managed to romance
I deliberately tried to make a hawk to romance him and it didn't work. I ended up romancing Anders and becoming like violently pro-mage, like more so than any other hawk. So that's what happened when I tried to romance friends.
Close that tab. Get out of there. Get out of there.
Self-care,
Claire.
Self-care. All right. That tag does not spark joy, Claire.
Into the trash with you.
We're going to use the Con Mori method of internet, yes. of social media curation.
I think Marie Kondo could actually teach a lot of people.
Oh my god.
Away. That needs to be her next series. How to stop yourself from encountering trash on the internet. I mean, I suppose you just have to throw your computer away.
applying the Con Mori method to to your social media spaces.
quick. TM. We're trademarking that.
Yeah,
we're going to do
it. The try by method of social media.
The try by branch of Marie Kondo's.
We need to write a book and then start a TV series.
Let's get her on the cast and her translator.
Okay. Oh man. I can't imagine how getting an email
and
from
she'd
us.
Be
do
like,
you want to be on our podcast?
Spark joy
who the
me
fuck are you?
Trash with you. Entire
she seems so sweet, though. Like, I haven't watched her show, but just like the little bits that I have seen, like she seems so sweet. Like, I don't feel like she should be on this podcast. She's just too good.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. She would say we did not spark joy into the trash.
Also,
she would thank us. She would thank us for it. For the thought.
Actually, my husband started watching it last night, and just out of curiosity, and he got like 3 seconds into it.
Like,
oh
yeah,
that's
this.
The people.
Me and Travis got
the people are so
the people
terrible.
On it were so miserable.
Yes,
I could not.
It's like I can't deal with this. And it was also like we were trying to. We've been throwing out a lot of stuff lately because we've got too many. Like we didn't bother to throw the kids' clothes out. Like I had. Size 2 clothes.
You know, that might be why you always have a pile of laundry in the basement. just thinking outside the box here.
Yeah. No, the reason why we always had a pile of laundry in the basement was because I'm a lazy fuck. But we've done a big clean out of clothes and stuff like that lately, and Murray's all like, oh, we should watch the show and see what else she has to say about decluttering. I'm like, Murray, we're not hoarders. we don't have to worry about it. And he's like, oh, well, I'll have a look anyway. And he sort of watched about 5 minutes. So I went, yeah, you're right. We're not hoarders. We are so not like this. We're going to get out of here. And I don't, like, I really don't want to sound like I'm making fun of the people who are on the show, because God damn, it's a real problem. I know my mum, one of my mum's friends is a hoarder, and it's a terrifying and really upsetting and depressing problem to have. And yeah. I'm just, ugh.
I didn't know she worked specifically with hoarders, but it did make me feel good. I saw her working with Hasan Minhaj not too long ago. And she was helping him clean up like his office, which also doubles as the nursery for his daughter. And I just got some kind of like personal reassurance out of it, because he's a total slob. And there's something so endearing about celebrities and micro celebrities and stuff like that who live like I do. Like,
there's live like this.
There's shit piled up on their counters, and they've got like a basket of charging cords and connection cords for shit that hasn't been used since the 80s, you know.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's one thing that we should probably pay attention to in our house, is the fact that because we are like we have so many computers. Like, we have so many computers. It's because we're terrible people, but we've got so many computers. And every time we get a new computer, we don't throw the old computer out.
I don't know what to do with the old one. What do you do with the old one?
It's very, like, there's like, we have like a collection, an electronics collection day once every six months, and you're meant to take your old iPhones and stuff to that, because
there's places that will take old electronics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, I have a friend who intentionally keeps all
four computers in just this room.
I have a friend who intentionally keeps. But there are four computers in this room right now. I'm not kidding. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm not kidding either. There's at least four, and then there's another in another room, and there's two more in another room.
The husband is at class right now, so he probably took that one with him. Anyway. I have a friend who intentionally keeps all of her old computers, and I'm talking like back to when they weighed like 40 pounds, you know.
Oh yeah.
And like, that seems reasonable to me. Like,
I've got
she told me this MacBooks. And I'm like, well, of course you do, because your stuff is in there. Like, what? I don't know how to like, yes, you move your stuff from one computer to the other computer. There's like a process for it, but your stuff is still in the old one. So what do you do?
I mean, it's not.
You're gonna do a disk wipe, but that's yeah. That's it. I've lost like 7 or 8 short stories, which is really it's a bit terrifying actually, because I didn't realize that I'd lost them. I thought that they were on the backup that I'd done. And I tried to get into the backup, and the backup doesn't work anymore. So all of this stuff that I had written is now in the ether, gone.
Have you heard the story of the green briefcase? Who the hell was it? Some writer. Now it's going to drive me nuts now that I can't think of it. So he was going somewhere to meet somebody, and he had a green briefcase full of like a bunch of stuff that he'd written. And it either got misplaced or stolen or something on the train on his way. And so he lost like all of this work. And then he wrote like his best book after, because he had none of that work to fall back on. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was
so you're saying that now that I've realized that I've lost about 4 years of short stories, that I'll write better stuff?
Yeah, apparently because okay, like cool. it forces you to let go of ideas that you've been that have been basically holding you back, I guess, or something.
Yeah,
I don't think it would actually work that way for me, because I would still remember the vague idea of what it was about and just try to rewrite.
But you have to recreate it though. Like, you can't just
But I do that. That's why I've got a novel that I've been working on for 15 years, because I keep recreating it.
You should probably put it in a briefcase and lose it on a train.
Yeah, lose it.
I want to say it was condo. Like it was like Ernest Hemingway or something like that. Like, it was like a big name, and it's gonna drive me nuts if I don't look it up.
Well, you'll work it out. I've got to read this email from Sin, because we got distracted. Okay, hello, fellow bisexuals. Sin is back with yet another story of some fucking weird shit that's gone down in my life. Or more accurately, before my life, because today I'm going to tell you how, for the first year of my life, I was technically a bastard. So think back a long, long time ago to the ancient year of 1991. I was in high school. The year that should have been marked year zero on the gay calendar, as it was the year of the birth of lesbian Jesus, Hayley Kiyoko. But I digress. I don't even know who Hayley Kiyoko is. Is that like a young
She's
person?
She's a musician.
She's a musician. Okay, cool. A musician. Very, very gay.
Very gay. Cool. I'm glad. I'm glad that there's gay musicians out there. Remember that year? I'm sure you do. I don't. I was busy not being born, which actually does tie into this story because in June of that year, a Jew from suburban Connecticut and a Catholic from rural New York are about to be married, and neither of them know it yet, but this one event is going to set them down a path of hair loss for both of them. But as is often the case from interfaith marriages, there were debates on the sort of services that would happen, with each family putting pressure on to make it more like the service of their particular religion, a process that would be repeated at the birth of their children and for literally every other event until the end of time. So, in an effort to please both families simultaneously, they managed to get both a Catholic priest and a rabbi to officiate their wedding. It costs an arm and a leg, but the wedding goes off without a hitch. Tears, food, the works. You all know the drill. You're all coupled. We are all coupled. And we are all married too, aren't we? We all had different marriages though. I know you, didn't you get married on a beach somewhere, Brandon?
Yeah. We all but eloped. Like, there were more people there than apparently is definitionally allowed for an elopement, but that's basically what we did. We didn't tell anybody but the few friends that showed up.
Time comes around to sign the marriage certificate, and they have the rabbi sign the papers as the officiant for some reason. As things go on, twins are born, including one extraordinarily handsome bisexual who shall remain nameless. I didn't know he was a twin.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And the year is now 2002. Dramatic year, yes? Well, I don't remember it. A bit of a busy year for me learning how to walk. Jesus Christ, he was born in 2001.
Right.
2002? Jesus
just,
Christ, I'm old.
Just to say, he is just in case we want almost to he is almost a year older than Baby Bi.
Oh my God!
Right?
Doesn't That's that, terrifying.
Doesn't that blow your mind? Like in a month, I have to give him access to our not safe for work board.
You don't have to. Just
only if he asks for it. As the story goes, the woman gets a letter from some official New York State office that said, in essence, "Surprise, you're not married." Which immediately got disseminated to the man, who was more than a little pissed. Apparently the rabbi who they had paid an arm and a leg to officiate their wedding and sign their marriage certificate wasn't actually a fucking rabbi at all. Which meant that marriage equals invalid. He'd scammed over 400 couples in New York State for more than a decade. Jesus!
Oh my God! That's... I gotta respect that, though.
Yeah!
Like, there's a weird part of that that I'm just like, all right, good
That's
job.
Right. I mean, why not?
Good crime!
Which meant that you're... good crime, yeah. I mean, it's it depends on how religious the families you're marrying are. But,
right.
It's a victimless crime, too, isn't it? According to my moral standards, which are, of course, the only ones that matter, it's a victimless crime.
Not if you're Catholic, but most Catholics probably wouldn't have a rabbi officiating.
No, I doubt that.
Anyway, go on.
Which meant that yours truly, much like my current namesake, I do love my bastard boy Sin, was a bastard child. I don't think they still have an option to mark that on birth certificates anymore, but the point still stands. No, they don't, Sin. When my daughter was born, all they were interested in was the names of the parents. They don't care if they're married or not. The bastard life, alas, was not long for me, as soon after the New York State legislature made all the couples that were still together retroactively married. So with the stain of bastardness off my honour, I went on to do nothing all the cool bastards did, like Jon Snow, Captain Annie Bonney, Alexander Hamilton, and the great actor Edwin Booth. I hope you all enjoyed this tale of bastardness and false rabbis now imprisoned for fraud. I am going to go and eat some spaghetti. With dearest love, Sin. Wow! He's got the best stories.
He does send us the best stories. Like,
that's so cool. yeah, as I said, I'm props to the rabbi. Really, that's awesome. I'm very, very
or the not rabbi. I guess is the case. Yes,
I mean, joy for you. For me, it would have meant I have to get remarried.
Oh yeah,
that actually
if you're Catholic, it doesn't count as marriage.
Yeah,
if you don't get married by a priest.
Yep.
Like, yeah. That's why I'll never understand why they're against gay marriage and stuff and same-sex marriage because. Getting married by the state, as far as a Catholic is concerned, means absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
You have to get married by the state and by the church.
Yeah, there's so many like weird Catholic rules to getting married. Like my grandfather was married when he was very young, and she left him while he was fighting in Korea, I think. I can't remember when, but she left him and the marriage dissolved, whatever. And then he married my grandmother and had a family and stuff. And I was in high school when it happened. They found out that the church never recognized the dissolution of his first marriage.
Yeah, you had to go through a whole process.
Yeah,
to get it.
So they had to go through the whole process. And then my grandparents, who were in their 50s at the time, I'm almost sure 50s and 60s, like had to have like a whole new wedding.
Yep. I mean, I think that'd be fun. But of course, I mean, again, it's depending on how religious and how much you think you're going to go to hell for having lived in sin for that long. It's going to be bad. I mean, anyway. We had
Claire.
I had to tell you the name of our marriage celebrant before we go any further. Okay. The guy who married us, his name was Ron McSporran. Nice. Yeah. Ron McSporran. McSporran was his last name. He's probably dead by now, actually. It's a long time ago.
We got married by a friend, which is a great way to like alienate all of your family members, but he couldn't get licensed in Hawaii. He was internet ordained, but he couldn't get licensed in Hawaii fast enough, so we had to actually hire I can't remember what she was. It was very new agey, but it was legal. So we hired her to just like watch over the marriage as he married us, and then she like signed all the stuff.
But
I'm actually always confused when people will talk about church weddings and that being costing a lot. Like, I don't know, maybe a rabbi's like more expensive to get, but like getting, I think reserving our whole church and getting the priest was like $250 or something.
Really?
That's insane.
Yeah. that like included like having someone
Ron wasn't
and stuff.
Yeah, we had ours at a hotel and it was very nice. And the whole thing was pretty expensive. But Ron wasn't the expensive
because we did a lot more than just the church ceremony, but that part was the cheapest part.
I was gonna say I think Protestant churches charge a lot more.
Oh, this is funny because Ron wasn't our celebrant was an ex federal policeman as well, and he was hilarious. And we booked him, and then he was like, "Oh, so what do you want to do? Do you want to have vows?" And we're like, "You know what? All we want to do is get married and then have a party, and we don't care how long the ceremony takes." And so the ceremony ended up being like 5 minutes, and then we're like, "Right, time for food."
that's the most hilarious thing to me about big formal weddings is like all the preparation and workup that goes into it, and you have like the rehearsal and all this shit. And I've only been in like one or two weddings, and one of them, like, we had a very long rehearsal. It took us like 4 hours to rehearse for this wedding.
Oh my God.
And it was a nighttime wedding, and there were like it was very beautiful, but the ceremony was like 17 minutes. You know, like all the lead up to all that stuff was over with in 17 minutes, and then like it was done. And I was like, we wasted 4 hours of our lives prepping for this 17 minutes.
Why is it so long? Like ours was super short. Like we did do a rehearsal, but it was like the priest was like, okay, walk, walk, walk.
I don't.
You didn't do mass?
No, I'm saying the rehearsal was like super short.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the wedding itself was actually super short.
I'm probably hyperbolizing a little, but like in reflection, but I do remember it taking a very long time in comparison to the length of the ceremony.
We did not do a rehearsal for ours.
Like, what do you have to rehearse?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, we mostly had to rehearse because then we also had like readers for like psalms and shit.
Oh, okay.
So it was like who goes up when, but it was,
okay, that makes
yeah,
sense.
It took maybe 10 minutes at most, and then it was just an excuse to, we all had, you know, dinner.
yeah we were like the first people to leave the wedding, so we were really tired. it was a really tiring day, and it was hot as a bastard. Like, it was the middle of September, but it was 35 degrees or something. And so Murray was wearing, you know, a tuxedo, and I was wearing this elaborate gown with a jacket on and everything. And we were just sweating like pigs under all our makeup. I was just like, I'm tired. Let's go back. Let's go to the hotel room now. and the next day, it was like again 35 degrees, and it was blowing a gale. And I'll never forget my husband's uncle. Like, he's from a family of cattle farmers, so they're right. Very, very Australian and very, very broadly accented. And we sort of came out of the hotel room, and Uncle Tim, I think his name was, was like, "All right, so we need enough to blow a dog off a chain out here." And I remember just looking at my husband going, "What the fuck? What family am I married into?" this man just said it was windy enough to blow a dog off a chain. And I pissed myself laughing. And Murray's like, "What's wrong with you?" I was like, "What? Haven't you? I've never heard that phrase before in my life." Anyway, I was reading this is coming around to the fact that I was reading a book when I was up in Queensland just last week visiting my
family. You don't read books, and, don't lie.
I do sometimes. Anyway, it was an Australian book, and in the book, someone used the phrase "windy enough to blow a dog off a chain." I was just like, "Ah, it's wrong."
Oh, that's...
Anyway.
You're the cutest. That just entertains me so much. Oh.
Australia's fun.
Hey,
when we're not being comfortably racist.
Hey, we're not as short on time as I was worried we were going to be. Like, I didn't... My notes are like 3/4 of a page, so I didn't think we'd have enough to fill everything up.
Oh, we went off on a couple of tangents.
We did.
Chickens... Chickens, spiders. We did a lot of spider
talk. Wow, why do you got to bring that up?
Dragon Age. We went off just on a real Dragon Age tangent for the first time in a good while.
Oh, hey, we're doing our treat exchange, right?
Oh, yeah.
I remember that as I was, like, boxing up my, this box that is absolutely not a glitter bomb.
Anything to do with us.
That's going elsewhere. But I do have stuff to pack up in my treat packages, so I thought maybe we could make a Galentine's Day of it.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea, actually. Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll get my box sorted and posted out on Monday, so okay. You guys can have...
Oh, God.
Claire, you might have to
get everything sorted.
Shoot me a postal address for you.
It's okay. I say Galentine's Day, and you guys will get this box in March. So,
I think we're finished for the day, aren't we?
Yeah, we're about to.
I'm sitting in a sweatbox.
Lap 59 minutes, right?
So Dragon Age
now.
Is...
We're 59 minutes, so I think we can stop.
Yeah. I mean, we still gotta do that close out.
Oh, yeah, we do. So if you want us to talk about things.
Not Dragon Age or spiders.
If you are tired of the spider talk, because I know I am.
We're gonna talk about Spider-Man.
We can definitely do a Spider-Man podcast.
You can send questions to bibibicast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
You can also go to byebyebyecast.tumblr.com, unless Tumblr decides we're not safe for work. Questions there.
We really aren't.
Please, no female presenting nipples in your questions.
We will also take them on our Twitter, which is why can I never remember Twitter?
I can literally never remember.
I think it's Bye 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 Podcast.
There's a link on the Tumblr, though.
Yes. There's also a link on the Tumblr to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/byebyebye, where I'm going to get off my lazy butt and do some stuff about rewards there.
You
so
can get woo. Fun stuff like talking to us on Discord, and we've made a special emoji for that. And
yes.
Fun stuff.
And
yes.
Pictures of my cat's butt on notes, and I will send you a personally handcrafted note in the mail.
A handcrafted note
in the mail.
Yeah, I love posting things.
Anybody who subscribes to the top tier, I forget what the top tier is, but if you subscribe to the top tier, I'll send you a.
I think we're still named after
Justin Timberlake is the bottom one. Isn't he?
Yeah. I will personally buy cards from Claire's Redbubble account. and send you and send you a card. Thanks.
Yes.
Anyway.
And we'll see you all next week. Hopefully I won't be recording from a box of steam. My God, it's hot in here. See you all later. Bye, bye, bye.
Bye, bye, bye.